Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Times the Brief. I'm Harvey Kojan, and these are the top stories of the day. Senate health care bill would result in 22 million uninsured by 2026, by Alana Abramson. The Senate's version of the Obamacare repeal bill will result in an additional 22 million people losing insurance by 2026, the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office said in its analysis on Monday. The bill would reduce the federal deficit $321 billion by 2026, an increase of $202 billion in savings from the version of the bill that passed the House of Representatives last month. But much of those savings come from reducing the funding for Medicaid. Cuts the CBO estimates will amount to $772 billion. By 2026, 49 million Americans would be uninsured should this bill become law, in comparison with the 28 million people who would remain uninsured by that year if the Affordable Care Act remained in place. Lower-income people between the ages of 50 and 65 would be among the biggest group of those without insurance. For people under 65, enrollment in Medicaid would fall 16% by 2026. Savings would also come by changing the Affordable Care Act subsidies to non-group health insurance. Cutting federal funding for Planned Parenthood for 1 year, another provision included in the bill, would ultimately reduce spending by $146 million for the next decade, but would increase Medicaid spending and have the biggest impact on coverage for low-income populations in areas with few other health care options. Overall, the estimates regarding the number of uninsured, which are just 1 million fewer than the number estimated in the House's version of the bill, coupled with the steep cuts to Medicaid, will likely pose a further impediment to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's ability to garner enough votes in the Senate for the bill to pass. The analysis of the bill is unlikely to quell the concerns of Republican senators who are on the fence about supporting it, particularly those concerned about the effect the Medicaid reductions will have on their constituents, like West Virginia Senator Shelley Moore Capito and Louisiana Senator Bill Cassidy, and those who have previously opposed the Planned Parenthood provision, like Senators Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski. With the Democrats universally opposed to the bill, McConnell can only afford 2 defectors, and 5 senators have already come out against it. The CBO had previously determined that the version of the Obamacare repeal bill that passed the House in May would increase the number of uninsured by 23 million to 51 million in comparison with the 28 million that would have been uninsured if the Affordable Care Act remained in place. The CBO also estimates that even though premiums in 2020 would be 30% lower than the Affordable Care Act, fewer people with low incomes would choose to purchase a plan because it would be such a high percentage of their income. The Senate bill repeals the Obamacare mandate to buy health insurance or pay a fee, although the Senate introduced a revision Monday that if individuals have coverage lapses for 63 days, they must wait 6 months before insurance can take effect once they decide to purchase it. The CBO estimated that would slightly increase the number on insurance, but not in 2019 because the premiums would be so high. Democrats were quick to pounce on the bill, decrying it as a tax cut for the wealthy that would hinder the less fortunate. The bill would repeal the parts of the Affordable Care Act that increased certain taxes on the wealthiest Americans, as well as a tax credit for some small businesses to provide health care. CBO's report today makes clear that this bill is every bit as mean as the House bill, said Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. This CBO report should be the end of the road for Trump care. Republicans would be wise to read it like a giant stop sign. Now we know why the Senate GOP hid their monstrosity of a health care bill, tweeted Senator Elizabeth Warren. Republican reaction was slower to trickle in. The Senate Budget Committee released a statement touting the statistics from the report about lowering premiums and reducing the deficit, as did McConnell. But many other senators, particularly those who are undecided, did not immediately release statements. The Republican National Committee immediately released a statement challenging the CBO, and the White House followed up with its own shortly thereafter. The CBO has consistently proven it cannot accurately predict how health care legislation will impact insurance coverage, the White House said in a statement. Although the CBO acknowledged uncertainty in its report, it did express confidence about two components that are sticking points for some senators still wavering on their support for the bill: the decrease in Medicaid spending and the increase in the number of uninsured individuals. The amount of federal revenues collected and the amount of spending on Medicaid would almost surely both be lower than under the current law, they wrote, and the number of uninsured people under this legislation would almost surely be greater than under the current law. The Hidden Dangers of Makeup and Shampoo by Alexandra Sifferlin. There's more to your makeup than meets the eye. New research shows that health-related complaints about cosmetic products like shampoo and makeup are at an all-time high since the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, began keeping track more than a decade ago. That's concerning because when cosmetic products cause health issues, addressing the problem, or even getting a potentially unsafe product off the market, isn't a simple process. Currently, cosmetic manufacturers have no legal obligation to report health problems from their products to the FDA. Cosmetics also do not need to go through a pre-market approval process before they're sold in stores, and regulators don't have to assess the safety and effectiveness of the claims on the products. Instead, people and doctors are asked to report any health complications to the FDA's database, called the Center for Food Safety and Applied Nutrition's Adverse Event Reporting System, or CFSAN. If the FDA sees any increases that warrant concern, they can investigate. As a dermatologist, we live and breathe cosmetics and personal care products, says study author Dr. Steve Hsu, a resident physician in the Department of Dermatology at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine, citing his motivation for the study. I get asked every day, what is safe to use? In the new research letter, Hsu and his colleagues looked at the number of adverse events reported to the FDA and found that over a 12-year period, there were 5,144 health-related complaints submitted due to cosmetic products. The study authors were able to evaluate the number of cases reported to the agency because in 2016, the FDA made the CFSAN database publicly available. The new research shows that between 2004 and 2016, an average of 396 events were reported per year, with an increase between 2015 to 2016. The three most commonly cited products were for hair care, skin care, and tattoos. This isn't designed to be alarmist, says Hsu. Still, we have this huge industry and there are lots of chemicals in these products that largely go unregulated. Relying on self-reported cases means there's a lot of underreporting, and it can be tough to definitively determine whether a given item is causing harm, even when there's a spike in complaints. In 2014, for example, the FDA started to investigate Wen by Chaz Dean cleansing conditioners when the product received 127 complaints from users that it was causing their hair to fall out, among other problems. When the FDA reached out to the company, they discovered that the manufacturer had received 21,000 complaints related to hair loss and scalp problems. However, as of now, the product remains on the market. In a corresponding editorial, three experts, including the most recent former commissioner of the FDA, Dr. Robert M. Califf, said that the challenge of overseeing cosmetic safety is daunting for regulators. The global cosmetics industry is expected to reach $265 billion in revenue in 2017, yet the FDA's Office of Cosmetics and Colors has a budget of about $13 million for 2017. For products that are used routinely, small effects over time within large populations can be almost impossible to detect without active surveillance, they write. Even when health risks are substantial, as with tobacco products, the path to identifying and interpreting those safety signals clearly enough to justify regulatory action is often long and torturous. To combat the problem, the writers of both the study and the editorial argue that better surveillance is needed. SHU encourages more people and their doctors to provide thorough reports to the FDA, and he argues companies should take a greater role in this reporting too. I think broader reporting from all parties and mandatory reporting from manufacturers is not a controversial thing to ask for, says SHU. Increasing the agency's budget and oversight is another solution, and the editorial authors argue the agency is under-resourced for even the very limited responsibilities it currently has for the safety of cosmetics. However, a bump to the FDA's budget, at least for now, doesn't seem likely, as the agency is facing the potential for budget cuts in the near future. The Surprising Benefit of Eating Fish, by Amanda McMillan. Ordering off the seafood menu may help ease the aches and pains of rheumatoid arthritis, RA, according to a new study in Arthritis Care and Research. People with RA who ate fish at least twice a week reported less joint swelling and tenderness than those who rarely or never did, and the findings suggest that the more fish they ate, the less active their disease. The study involved 176 people with RA who answered questions about their diet over the past year. Specifically, the authors looked at responses to questions about how often people ate tuna, salmon, sardines, and other fish prepared raw, broiled, steamed, or baked. They did not look at how often people ate fried fish, shellfish, or fish in mixed dishes, like shrimp stir-fry, for example, because these meals tend to be lower in omega-3 fatty acids, a type of fat with anti-inflammatory properties. Previous studies have shown that taking fish oil supplements, which are rich in omega-3s, may benefit people with RA, but this is among the first studies to look at the consumption of actual fish. The researchers also looked at the patient's disease activity scores, a measure that takes into account the number of swollen and tender joints they have, as well as a blood marker of inflammation. Disease activity scores were an average of half a point lower for people who ate the most fish, twice a week or more, compared to those who ate the least, once a month or never. This was found after researchers adjusted for a number of factors that may otherwise affect the results, including age, sex, body mass index, depression, marital status, medication use, and fish oil consumption. That may not sound like much, but for the scale used in the study, a score of less than 2.6 indicates remission, while a score greater than 5.1 indicates active disease. A half-point reduction is clinically significant, say the researchers. It's about one-third the amount of improvement reported in clinical trials for methotrexate drugs, which are considered the standard of care for RA. With that type of improvement, we would generally expect that a patient would feel noticeably better, says lead author Dr. Sarah Tedeschi, associate physician in rheumatology at Brigham and Women's Hospital. The study also suggests that people don't have to eat fish twice a week to get some benefit, and they don't have to stop at twice a week either. Each serving of fish per week was linked to lower disease activity. The authors concluded that higher intake of fish may be associated with lower disease activity in people with RA, although they caution that the study, which only looked at fish consumption and disease activity at one point in time, could not show a cause-and-effect relationship. While Tedeschi can't say whether eating fish might have anti-inflammatory benefits for people without RA, she does point to previous research that has suggested a small protective effect. If our findings can be replicated in other populations and over longer periods of time, we may be able to show one specific reason for people with RA to eat more fish, says Tedeschi. That's in addition to plenty of other reasons that eating fish is a smart choice, she adds, whether you have arthritis or not.
One Wall Street analyst thinks Costco's Amazon troubles are overblown. By Katie Riley. A Wall Street analyst says he is bullish about Costco stock despite the potentially disruptive merger between Amazon and Whole Foods Market, and even after the bulk grocery store's stock fell 12.7% on Friday. The slide came in the wake of the June 16th announcement that Amazon would acquire Whole Foods, but analysts for Raymond James Financial predicted on Monday that Costco would not be materially impacted by the merger, CNBC reported. The financial services company raised its rating for Costco shares from market perform to outperform. Admittedly, even with the recent pullback, Costco still trades at a premium valuation to the overall market and its large retail peers. Nonetheless, its business model remains intact with healthy membership growth and strong renewal rates, Raymond James analyst Bug Bugatch wrote in a note to clients reported by CNBC. While Amazon's agreement to buy Whole Foods, when consummated, will add a new dimension to the grocery business, it does not materially impact Costco's unique business model. And we would be buyers on cost's recent weakness. Grocery stocks plunged after the Whole Foods-Amazon merger was announced, and some Wall Street analysts downgraded Costco. But on Monday, Bugatch estimated that Costco sales will rise to $139 billion in 2018, up from $129 billion this year, CNBC reports.
Here are the best and the worst moments from the 2017 BET Awards by Katie Lang. While new artists like Chance the Rapper and SZA made a splash at the 2017 BET Awards, the night belonged to the elders. Industry legends like Mary J. Blige, Tamar, Braxton, Maxwell, Escape, and New Edition, whose standout performances during Sunday night's show in Los Angeles were proof that some things really do get better with age. The lengthy performance-packed show was helmed by comic Leslie Jones, whose opening monologue riffing on being old school was a more than fitting introduction to a night that largely celebrated the legacy and influence of 90s R&B. In addition to the industry vets, artists like Bruno Mars, Kendrick Lamar, Future, Big Sean, Migos, Gucci Mane, and DJ Khaled helped contribute to the 20-plus performances of the night, while everyone from Lil' Kim to Solange Knowles was on deck to help present the night's numerous honors and awards. Clocking in at a whopping 4 hours, this award show is one night that won't soon be forgotten. See the good, the bad, and the very, very dramatic in our rundown below. The best. Mary J. Blige. The queen of hip-hop soul held court as only she could with a glorious and confident performance that confirmed that she's not wringing her hands over her recent divorce. Sporting a glittery ensemble that showed off what Jamie Foxx would later declare to the audience as her breakup body, Blige performed Set Me Free and Love Yourself, the latter of which got an assist from A$AP Rocky. Escape. The original girl gang reunited on the BET stage for a showing that brought joy to every person who grew up on 90s R&B. Perhaps even more heartwarming was seeing Tiny Harris and Candy Burris being recognized outside of the reality TV franchises that they're known for. Social activism. The cast of the upcoming film Detroit took time during the show to say the names of those lost to police brutality and violence. Quote, Philando Castile, Eric Garner, Sandra Bland, Alton Sterling, Freddie Gray, Michael Brown, and Trayvon Martin. We gotta influence change, unquote. During her acceptance speech for Young Stars, Yara Shahidi paid tribute to Tamir Rice on what would have been his 15th birthday. Later, Solange Knowles called for a moment of silence for Black Lives Taken before honoring Women's March leader Tamika Mallory for her advocacy work. Along with Best New Artist, Chance the Rapper was honored by the likes of Michelle Obama, Jesse Williams, and Common for the Humanitarian Award. Upon receiving it, he reiterated his desire to work toward justice, especially when it came to the racial politics of mass incarceration and the educational system. Kendrick Lamar. The damn rapper took home the top prize as Best Male Hip-Hop Artist, but really stole the show when he appeared as a guest rapper for Future's performance of the already viral Mask Off. It's hard to upstage a performer as charismatic as Future, and yet Lamar did it with the same devastating ease that he employs with his verbose flows. In Memoriam Tributes. Chuck Berry got a rousing tribute thanks to Roman Gianarthur's lively rendition of Johnny B. Goode, while George Michael was honored with a dazzling and sultry performance of Careless Whisper by El DeBarge and Kamasi Washington. Prodigy of Mobb Deep, who passed away earlier in the week at the age of 42, was also honored by Lil' Kim and the other half of Mobb Deep, Havoc. Quote, "For over 20 years, he and I went through it all and seen it all," Havoc said. "I'm going to miss my dude. This loss is painful, but the lyrical legacy he left us will impact the culture forever. Rest in peace, Prodigy, my brother," unquote. Upon receiving his award for Best Male Hip-Hop Artist, Kendrick also paid tribute to Prodigy. New Edition. Nostalgia was at an all-time high with the Tributes for New Edition, who was honored on Sunday night with the Lifetime Achievement Award. The OG boy band was recently the subject of a BET biopic, and the biopic's cast took to the stage to honor the group with a retrospective of their hits over the course of their shared and solo careers with songs like Candy Girl, Poison, and My Prerogative. Later, the singers themselves performed together once again, much to the delight of the audience. Their songs included Mr. Telephone Man, Can You Stand the Rain, and If It Isn't Love. Despite the nearly four decades since their start, the boys-turned-men of New Edition proved that they were still the best in the game when it comes to harmonizing and dancing in sync. Remy Ma. The Bronx's self-declared Queen of New York secured another jewel for her crown when she took home Best Female Hip-Hop Artist, breaking the 7-year winning streak held by rival Nicki Minaj. Lest anyone think that Remy's win wasn't the latest development in their longtime beef, Remy spit bars from her diss track about Minaj, Sheether, before accepting her award. Remy also used her time to talk about her time in jail, telling her fans that, quote, "It's hard, but you can do it. You can make mistakes and come back," unquote. Asad Khalid. Of course, the hardest working baby made an appearance at the BET Awards. Besides joining his father, DJ Khaled, for a performance of I'm the One with Lil Wayne, Chance the Rapper, and Quavo, Asad also blessed us all by wearing matching turquoise Gucci suits with rapper Gucci Mane, a true icon at the ripe age of 8 months. The worst. Technical difficulties. SZA's lush, seductive set toward the end of the show was one of the night's best vocal performances, but sadly it won't be her rendition of The Weeknd that stays with viewers who are much more likely to remember the glaring technical difficulties that forced the singer to stop and restart her performance. She wasn't the only one who suffered at the hands of production. Insecure's Issa Rae, who introduced SZA, was incorrectly announced as Yara Shahidi. Additionally, there were notable gaps and lags throughout the program, perhaps most awkwardly when there was no transition between when New Edition accepted their award and their costume change for their performance. Stage set and camera work. The show's stage had a moving walkway that strongly resembled a conveyor belt, which made it difficult for the talent and presenters to walk and left most viewers in mortal fear that their fave would be the victim to falling flat on their face. Additionally, the camera angles veered erratically between perspectives, making the viewing experience disorienting to say the least. Length. Too much of a good thing can be horrible, or at the very least, very taxing. The BET Awards are always a wealth of talent, but while some performances were phenomenal, there were too many that were subpar or simply not that memorable. Here's looking at you, Trey Songz. While the show's focus on performances as opposed to the actual presentation of the awards is more entertaining in theory, a 4-hour award show does little to maintain flagging interests. And Chris Brown. How and why does Chris Brown continue to get invited to perform at these functions? Between his current restraining order from Karrueche Tran and his mixtape Burn My Name with Ray J, it's questionable whether or not Brown's obvious talent is justification enough for co-signing him as a problematic fave.
22 retailers that are at serious risk of bankruptcy by Brad Tuttle. Things just seem to keep getting worse for the troubled brick-and-mortar retail world. After years of struggling to compete with all-powerful Amazon, retailers have been closing hundreds of stores amid declining sales. Analysts are even predicting that one quarter of America's malls could close within the next 5 years. And in at least one way, the situation is worse for retailers now than it was during the doldrums brought on by the financial crisis, a report released last week by Moody's Investors Service indicates. The new report gives ratings of CAA or worse, defined as subject to very high credit risk, to 22 major retailers. That's up from 19 when a similar report was issued in February, and it tops the high, also 19, recorded during the Great Recession. And indeed, one of the 22 filed for bankruptcy shortly after the report was released. Distressed retailers like Sears, David's Bridal, and Neiman Marcus are facing a perfect storm, senior Moody's retail analyst Charles O'Shea explained to USA Today, referencing the title of the famous Sebastian Junger book and subsequent movie. You're on the Andrea Gale right now, and the water's starting to get very choppy. Spoiler alert, no one on that ship survived. Today's retail storm centers on Amazon and the widespread shift to online shopping in general. Still, Moody's notes that only 15% of the retailers it analyzes are currently at a high risk of bankruptcy. The majority of retailers remain fundamentally healthy, O'Shea said in a press release accompanying the new Moody's report. But as select groups of retailers continue to deteriorate, in particular department stores and specialty retailers, we believe the distressed ranks will keep growing. Here are the 22 chains that Moody says are at serious risk of bankruptcy. Board Riders S.A. The sports retailer is a subsidiary of the surf-inspired company Quiksilver, which itself emerged from bankruptcy in early 2016. Bon-Ton. The department store company, based in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin, has reported big losses in recent years. Calcius Acquisition. Calcius owns the Cole Haan footwear brand. Charlotte Russe. The apparel retailer includes its flagship women's clothing stores and the child-focused brand Peak. Charming Charlie. The women's fashion accessories chain was launched in 2004. Chinos Intermediate Holdings. That's the parent company for the preppy J. Crew brand. Claire Stores. The chain, focused on accessories and jewelry for young women, has been closing stores and losing money for years. David's Bridal. The bridal retail chain, once known as the Walmart of weddings, has been categorized as distressed for several months. Everest Holdings. It's the parent company of the well-known outdoorsy fashion brand Eddie Bauer. Evergreen. It's the parent company of the for-profit thrift store chain Savers, which has over 300 locations in the U.S., Canada, and Australia. Fairway Group Holdings. The grocery store chain went public in 2013 and has subsequently struggled as it expanded, entering bankruptcy protection for a few months last spring and summer. Gymboree. Analysts have said for a while that the children's apparel retailer has been on the brink of bankruptcy. Sure enough, on Monday, a few days after the new Moody's report, Gymboree filed for bankruptcy and announced it anticipated it could close as many as 450 stores. Neiman Marcus, the luxury department store, which has gained attention lately for selling bizarrely overpriced pre-ruined apparel, $1,425 for destroyed sneakers, $425 for jeans covered in mud, recently put itself up for sale amid a sustained sales slump. 99 Cents Only Stores. The discount chain runs roughly 350 stores in the southwestern U.S. Nine West Holdings. The firm owns its flagship women's shoe stores and also owned the Easy Spirit footwear brand until it was sold off last year. Sears Holdings. The company owns both Kmart and its iconic flagship retail brand, but could close over 250 stores this year. Tom's Shoes. The socially conscious footwear retailer, which donates a pair of shoes to charity for every pair purchased, had its debt rating downgraded last summer. True Religion Apparel. The Los Angeles-based fashion retailer has been hit with slumping sales as premium-priced jeans have given way to trendy athleisure clothing. Velocity Pooling Vehicle. The owner of MAG Retail, a seller of motorcycle parts and accessories, was downgraded by Moody's a year ago. Plus three more chains. Indra Holdings. The holdings company owns Ohio-based Totes Isotoner, known for mostly boots, gloves, and umbrellas. Tops. The supermarket company has roughly 180 Tops-friendly markets in locations in New York, Vermont, Massachusetts, and Pennsylvania. And Vince, the luxury fashion retailer, which runs 40 full-price and 14 outlet stores, saw net sales decrease 14% during the first quarter of 2017. Turkey bans gay pride march in Istanbul. By the Associated Press. Turkish authorities have announced they will not allow a march for gay, lesbian, and trans rights to take place Sunday. The Istanbul Governor's Office said Saturday that the LGBTI, lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, and intersex Pride March would be banned for the safety of participants and tourists and public order. LGBTI activists had announced on social media that they would organize a march starting from Taksim Square. The governor's office stated the area was not designated for demonstrations and an appropriate application had not been received. It also said various groups had raised serious reactions against the march. The 2014 Pride March in Istanbul attracted up to 100,000 people, one of the largest gatherings celebrating LGBTI rights and diversity in the Muslim world. Authorities have not allowed Pride March since. We'll catch you, honey! Teenage girl rescued after 25-foot fall off amusement park ride. By Alana Abramson. Park guests and employees at Six Flags Great Escape Park in upstate New York became unlikely heroes when they stepped in to rescue a teenage girl dangling from a gondola ride, working together to catch her as she fell 25 feet into their arms. The 14-year-old girl, who has not been publicly identified, did not sustain any serious injuries in the Saturday incident, according to local authorities. She was riding the Sky Ride at Six Flags Great Escape in Queensbury, New York, when she slipped out of the gondola chair. Video captured at the scene shows her dangling from the two-person gondola as park guests gather below her. The girl's neck initially appeared to be stuck in the gondola, but she was able to untangle herself before dropping 25 feet. Lauren Lent, a mail handler from Glenville, New York, who was in the park during the incident and captured the scene on video, said he was waiting for his children to finish at the Sky Ride when he heard screaming and saw a rider dangling. I just pulled my phone out and turned it into video because I was amazed. It's not something you've ever seen or would want to see, he told Time. He videotaped for about 20 seconds, he said, and he and half a dozen men began strategizing how to catch the girl when the ride was completely stopped. One man climbed up a tree to push the branches out of the way. As she began to drop, someone in the crowd that had gathered below her can be heard yelling, "We'll catch you, honey!" I think it was an impulsive coordination, Lent said. It was a bunch of strangers coming together to help out a person in an emergency situation. Lent was frustrated, though. He said not one park employee was on the scene initially. When they did arrive, he began yelling at them because he thought they weren't moving quickly enough. A security guard asked him to remove himself from the scene, so he ultimately shot video of the girl's rescue. The footage shows her hitting a tree as she fell, but cheers erupt as the girl is caught. Six Flags said in a statement that the girl was caught by guests and security personnel. Emergency medical services were sent to the scene and she was transported to a local hospital before being transported by helicopter to a hospital in Albany. She remains there, authorities said, in stable condition and with no serious injuries. Authorities said a 47-year-old man was also hospitalized when he hurt his back trying to catch the girl, but has since been released. The Sky Ride, listed under Family Rides on the park's website, is described as a round-trip ski-lift-style gondola ride. Lent, who says he is a season pass holder, says this incident won't infringe on his visits to the park, but he won't be sending his family on the Sky Ride anytime soon. The Warren County Sheriff's Office said they inspected the ride with park personnel and found that everything was working correctly. Six Flags said that the New York State Department of Labor cleared the ride to operate, but it is remaining closed while the park conducts an internal review. "We're in the process of gathering more information," Six Flags Queensbury said in a statement. "The safety and security of our guests is our top priority, and our thoughts and prayers are with our guest and her family." Kellyanne Conway says the Senate health care bill doesn't cut Medicaid. That's not true. By Alana Abramson. White House senior advisor Kellyanne Conway denied that the Senate's health care bill would cut Medicaid, even though the draft revealed Thursday suggests otherwise. "These are not cuts to Medicaid," Conway told George Stephanopoulos on ABC's This Week. "This slows the rate for the future, and it allows governors more flexibility with Medicaid dollars because they're closest to the people in need." But the draft of the health care bill Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell released on Thursday includes steep cuts to Medicaid, aiming to phase out the federal funding implemented under Obamacare for states to expand Medicaid eligibility. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office estimated that the House version of the bill would cut Medicaid spending by $880 billion, which President Donald Trump accounted for in his budget. The CBO is slated to release their analysis of the Senate bill this coming week. Conway said former President Barack Obama had expanded Medicaid in a way that wasn't always beneficial, and the bill would bring the program back to its original moorings. The people who the expansion helped, she said, would initially be grandfathered in, but should consider other options. Obamacare took Medicaid, which was designed to help the poor, the needy, the elderly, the sick, the disabled, also children and pregnant women. It took it and it went way above the poverty line and opened it up to many able-bodied Americans who should probably find other, should at least see if there are other options for them, she said. If they're able-bodied and they want to work, then they'll have employer-sponsored benefits like you and I do. But the Medicaid cuts proposed in the bill are the reason some senators have expressed hesitation. West Virginia Senator Shelley Moore Capito said she was evaluating the bill to ensure it wouldn't adversely affect her constituents, half a million of whom are on Medicaid. And Nevada Senator Dean Heller, who said on Friday that he could not support the bill in its current form, cited Medicaid cuts as a chief concern. I have made clear that I want to make sure the rug is not pulled out from under Nevada or the more than 200,000 Nevadans who received insurance for the first time under Medicaid expansion, Heller said in a statement after the bill was released. Shoplifting and other fraud cost retailers nearly $50 billion last year, by Katie Riley. Loss of inventory from stores due to causes including shoplifting and employee theft cost the U.S. retail industry nearly $48.9 billion in 2016. The National Retail Security Survey, conducted annually by the National Retail Federation Trade Group, found that the average inventory shrink rate increased to 1.44% in 2016. That figure, which measures missing inventory, includes items that go missing because of shoplifting, theft by employees, administrative errors, vendor fraud, and other unknown loss. Most missing inventory, 36.5%, was attributed to shoplifting by outside customers, followed by employee theft, 30%. Administrative errors accounted for 21.3% of inventory shrink, while vendor fraud accounted for 5.4%. The survey, which included 83 retailers, some of which have multiple brands, found that the average cost per shoplifting incident doubled to $798.48. The average cost per employee theft incident was $1,922.80. The survey attributed that in part to a decrease in punitive action against shoplifters and employees. The Ultimate Harry Potter Quiz. Find out which house you truly belong in. By Chris Wilson. Ever since Harry Potter first donned the sorting hat in J.K. Rowling's Wizarding World series, millions of fans have wondered which of the four houses they would be assigned on their first evening at Hogwarts: Gryffindor, Ravenclaw, Hufflepuff, or Slytherin. Over the years, many sites have aimed to answer that question with multiple-choice quizzes drawn from anecdotes in the seven books. In honor of the 20th anniversary of the first volume's publication on June 26th, we thought it was high time to answer this question more rigorously by teaming up with social scientists from Cambridge University to create a scientific-based quiz on which house best matches your personality. To accomplish this, we worked with the researchers to develop a 21-question quiz compiled from several well-established scientific personality surveys, choosing questions that related to prevalent themes in the books. Over the past several weeks, we recruited hundreds of Harry Potter fans to take this survey on behalf of 20 different characters from the books, 5 from each house. The tens of thousands of data points we gathered gave us a detailed portrait of how different personality traits correspond to the personalities of members of each of the 4 houses. Now it's your turn to take the quiz and find out which house is the closest statistical match to your personality. You'll also see how well you match the other 3 houses. In the spirit of many other projects where Time has partnered with social scientists to allow readers to participate in their research, this quiz invites you to anonymously submit your responses to the researchers, which will contribute data to their studies. It may seem a little unusual to apply the sophisticated field of personality psychology to a fictional universe, but a close reading of the Harry Potter canon, or in many of our cases, several close rereads, suggests something more interesting. The Sorting Hat is itself a personality test, so it made perfect sense to try and deconstruct that process into a scientific survey. Fortunately, there's a rich body of science devoted to this topic. Unlike the popular Myers-Briggs personality test, which has little proven scientific merit, social scientists have developed a range of personality surveys that are well-researched and show statistically rigorous differences in how people behave. The best known of these is called the Big 5 test, which measures 5 traits: openness to experience, conscientiousness, extroversion, agreeableness, and neuroticism. You may recall seeing a condensed version of this survey in Time's feature on which state your personality best matches. The 21 questions in the Harry Potter personality quiz are drawn from both the Big 5 test and a handful of other well-studied personality inventories that measure other traits that are commonly seen in the Harry Potter novels, like courage and humility. The survey was assembled by Cambridge psychologists Frederick Goetz and Joe Scott in collaboration with Time. The data we collected on the personalities of Harry Potter characters, from Harry himself to Professor Snape and Luna Lovegood and many others, shows that there are significant differences in the personality traits of characters from different houses. When you take this quiz, we analyze your responses and compare them to how closely they match each of the 4 houses, using a standard statistical model designed to measure the relationship between data sets. Your affinity for each house is measured independently, so it's very possible that your personality closely matches 2 different houses, a phenomenon that the Sorting Hat itself is well familiar with, given its history of waffling between 2 houses when a character's personality isn't an obvious match for 1. As many fans have noted, for example, Hermione Granger's ferocious pursuit of knowledge resembles the studiousness associated with Ravenclaw more than Gryffindor, a puzzlement that Rowling acknowledges on Pottermore.com. The Sorting Hat spent nearly 4 minutes trying to decide whether it should place Hermione in Ravenclaw or Gryffindor. Thanks for joining us. I'm Harvey Kojan, and you've been listening to the daily edition of Time's The Brief. To get this sent to your inbox every morning, go to time.com/thebrief. You can also subscribe through iTunes or your favorite podcast app. I'll be back tomorrow. Until then, enjoy the day.